We had a big reception for Buren Lanham several days ago, and because there were so many people there, we really didn't feel that there would be much time to really talk to him about his work and find out more about it. And we decided to hold this little reception and kind of honor you again, Buren. We're very honored to have you here and your family. And you brought some more work here we can maybe talk about a little bit. First, let me just get this on. Okay. I guess that's it. That thing intimidates me.
Nothing like a folklorist scared of her tape recorder, right?
Well, it looks as though you brought half of our audience with you.
And you said to bring all milk, Chris.
Would you introduce everybody? Would you just kind of tell us who is who?
Oh, my family?
Yeah.
I mean, sure, my wife, Icy. That's my son. That's my grandson. That's my granddaughter. That's my daughter-in-law. That's my three grandchildren now. And this is my son and his wife, and my daughter and granddaughter. That's my daughter, Virginia Snyder. This is Cindy. My other son's wife. And this is my little red-headed grandchild. This here is my daughter. That's my baby girl.
Blast. Well, I'm very glad to meet you all. And I don't want to, go into too much detail about who all is here, but we have people who've come here from all over the country to take different classes here, and everybody is interested in sharing all their experiences. We have two people here who are teaching classes in crafts. This is Carl Newman. He's a weaver and spinner and a lace maker. And this is Pemberton Cecil, and he also works with wood. Pemberton's a toy maker, all the old-timey toys, which we'll talk about a little bit later, and some of our students and staff. We'd like to know a few things maybe about you and how you got started wood carving, and why is it that maybe, what made you first start doing something like this? Did you see some work like this, or did you just...
No, I never saw no work like that. None of my people before me, they had never whittled or carved, whichever you want to call it. I just picked it up alone. Because as a child, I had a kind of a hankering, for work like that. And I worked in the woods, went to the woods to work, to camp when I was a 17-year-old. And I worked in 1958 in the woods. And I retired and I was there at home, nothing to do. I kind of got bored, I just went to carving and carved out a little owl out of a little spruce, the first thing I ever carved out. And I brought it out of the woods, Monterey, from where I was working in the woods. And the root laid around there a good while. So when I quit work, I noticed that root there one day, and I just picked it up, and it was just a little piece running about that high, from the root. So I thought, there ought to be an owl called out of that. So I went to work on it, cleaned the root up good, took my knife, took all the loose wood off, and the decayed wood. When I got it finished, it looked pretty good to me. So that was a start.
Do you still have that first owl that you got?
No, I gave that to my wife's brother. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it might still be with Kathy. that's the only thing I reckon that led me into a course.
You said you used to work the woods. Does that mean you were a logger? Did you work in a logging camp and you were away for a whole week at a time or so?
I worked in a logging camp. There were 80 and 100 men there. All slept upstairs in one big room. Never got to go home once a week, so pretty strong smell playground.
After you got done working the woods in the evening in those logging camps, did you ever sing songs or tell stories, or were there any guys that did any whittling or didn't? You know, what did anybody do for, you know, after you got back and had your dinner? I imagine there was a camp cook. You probably sat around for a little while and maybe talked or did something. What, you know, what
you
types of things
books,
happened
you?
In those?
Yeah,
camps?
I read the Western stories when I Zane Gray's books. You could order them from Montgomery Ward the Montgomery Ward catalog back at that time. That was 1927, 28, 29. And you get them books for 89 cents a piece, 300 and 400 page books, you know, Zane Gray.
Oh boy.
People wasn't, you know, there wasn't nobody interested in anything like that. Get a piece of wood, it didn't make no difference how fat it was, it sat down with a plumb up. So you couldn't make no head with that, you know. Like it was there's a boy going with an old man's daughter one time. So this girl went to, this boy went to the house to, you know, to ask for his daughter if they had married. And they was both sitting there whittling, you know. Of course, this girl's father, he's watching him, you know. So he picked up that stick and he whittled plumb away, didn't make anything. And they asked if he'd marry his daughter then. No, he said, you can't. He said, you picked up that stick there. Instead of making some little thing out of it, he said, you whittled it all the way and threw it down. He said, you shan't have my daughter.
Just a character. Did you continue whittling more and more?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When did you start doing it? You know, really a lot, or spending a lot of time doing it?
Well, let's see. Miss Schiff had this craft shop over here in Elkins. And I sold a lot of stuff through her shop there. That's the first stuff that a carving ever sold.
How did that happen? Did she see it and ask about it, or?
Yeah, well, you see, she saw my carving there at the Forest Festival in 68. So she asked me if I'd want us, you know, her to sell some. I said she'd leave it to sell. So I sold about that to her there for about 2 or 3 years. Yeah, she bought a lot of stuff off of me. And of course, had the first thing on consignment, you know. She didn't want to sell or not. But it sold okay.
Did your whittling ever help you get through some hard times?
Uh-huh.
Did your whittling ever help you get through some hard times?
Really? Yeah, I carved, made money, and I put it in my home.
Good.
It wasn't insulated, you know, or anything. Had that old slate shingled on, you know, and I'd overdone it completely. Now I branched out, you know, to Dr. Butterworth, down from Clendenin, and Champ Butler from Charleston, and Glenn Ward.
These are people who collect your work? These are people who collect your work?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I don't know. One had no idea of the stuff that I sold. Dr. Butterworth. Mm-hmm. He said he had a room he wanted to fill up, a den, you know, one wall. Now I sold people in Japan was there, and they bought carving there.
How did they find out about your work?
Through Dr. Ward, Glenn Ward there at Charles. There was a Japanese girl come over there, you know, for a summer training, you know, just to come and stay in the United States, and that's the way they got, you know, the know-how and where I lived, you know. And, course, he already had some work there, you know, and she saw it. And she brought a doctor, a woman doctor, a lady doctor from Japan over there, and she bought some of my carvings. And she sent me the pictures of it later.
Do people in Mill Creek think of you as an artist? I mean, do they realize that
no,
everybody's...
I don't think so.
I'm just wondering what people in a town like Mill Creek think of someone who spends a lot of their time doing something like carving. Is that respected or considered odd or anything?
Well, I don't know really. Of course, they know now there's some people, I'll make an exception. There's some people, you know, that's more or less interested, you know, but as a whole, no. I don't let anybody know, you know.
It's too late now. It's been in the paper.
Yeah, I just, you know, try to keep a low profile on things like that.
He can't keep hid now.
Are any of your children following your footsteps?
What do you say?
Do any of your children whittle or anything
no,
like that?
No.
Any of them
pick it up? A couple of them try. Dang,
cutting
it. Eugene's trying to make a duck.
Eugene's trying to make a duck.
Dad, did you find that who the hell I tried to whittle out? I had to get under some wood.
Yeah, I found him.
That's the last time I tried to whittle anything.
You failed too. Well, you just started to keep on trying. If first you don't succeed, you know, try again. So I carved out a tiger up there. And the wood, piece of wood wasn't big enough, you know, to get the head on the tiger. You know, it was a pretty piece of wood. And I was determined to make that tiger. So I carved out 19 heads before I got one. I'd carve one out and then soon I'd throw it in the fire. I carved out the 19th one I carved out while I was what I wanted.
Did he drive you crazy when he was doing that?
No, I'd ask him why he wouldn't have so many.
Let me ask you another question. Does he make a terrible mess? Does he make a terrible mess?
I know he did.
Oh, I've worked all of it, piece after piece of carvings up. Maybe work a week on them, and then just take it in and put them in the stove. Wouldn't suit me, you know, and so I didn't want it. Some of them people come there and said, well, why didn't you save them and let us out? Well, I said, it didn't suit me, they wanted to see the Jew.
When you make a carving, do you, or when you get an idea for something, do you usually get the idea of what you want to make first and then try and find a piece of wood that suits, or do you look at a piece of wood and say, that wood has this in it? Mm-hmm. So you think of your idea first and then find a suitable piece of wood. Looks like a lot of your inspiration comes from nature. Did you spend much time, learning the birds and the wildflowers and stuff like that?
I've always tried to observe all the birds and the plants, trees, you know, the shapes of trees, you know. Mm-hmm. All the way trees grew, you know, and all odd shapes, you know. Well, I spent my life in the woods, you might say. But I was either cutting timber, working the woods, or I was singing or bee hunting, groundhog hunting. We lived on groundhog back then.
Do you still sing? Groundhogs
and rams.
Oh, Mill Creek rams. My goodness.
Do you use power tools or just hand tools?
Hand tools. Don't have no power tool, roll an electric drill.
Do you use a drill sometimes with these? Or do you use a drill on a little?
Yeah, drill the eyes, you know, and then before you mount anything like that, you see you have to bore the hole, drill a hole through, you see the. And then I whittle my dowels out of a white hickory. That's a pretty tedious job, you know, to get them round. Slow work.
You make your dowel round?
Just as round as I can get them.
I've seen other guys make dowels with 8 sides to them. Use those.
You know about white hickory, it's one of the toughest woods, you know.
Yeah.
That you can get, you know, for a fall or something like that.
Is all the wood you use West Virginia wood? Have you ever worked in foreign wood?
I have one piece of my nephew brought in from Alaska, Diamond Weber.
Mm-hmm.
He just brought a couple little limbs in. Mm-hmm. And he gave me a piece of wood about that long. And I carved that little end head over there.
Is
what?
Cedar good to work with?
How?
Cedar? Is cedar good to work with?
It is, yes. It's nice to whittle, but the only fault I have to cedar, you know, it's kind of a loose grain wood, you know. And after you get your carving done, a lot of time, you know, say if you whittle across grain so much, you know, or maybe this your top layer or kind of that douche, you know. It's a rosinous wood, you know, there's rosin in it. And that'll kind of that douche, you know, after so long a time. But it's really nice to work. It cuts good and smooth, you know.
It has a nice smell to it, doesn't it, cedar?
Is yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had a piece that a friend gave me, I could remember from cedar or what, but it has a real pretty smell to it.
She came to visit.
Yeah, last Sunday night, you know, like they'd announce someone, then everybody would clap and the birds would start chattering. And they'd quiet down while we talk, and the people would start clapping again, the birds would start chattering. Their ears are burning.
Have you lived in Mill Creek all your life?
No.
Where did you live other than
we
that?
We lived out there at a place called High Germany. High Germany Knob. But we lived right off and on the highest part in the High Germany Knob. You see, the way that got to be called High Germany, years ago, back, let's see, well, I was born then, but I might not have been. You see, the government surveyed through there, you know, the elevations of the highest knobs, you know, highest points and elevation, you know. And there was a big sugar tree stood right on top of the High Germany Knob. And they cut the limbs all out of that tree, you know, all so long. And then they made a platform up there and then put the American flag up there.
Huh.
And that I can remember seeing that tree stand. The old people that told me the one time, the old man with the name of Tim, I forget his given name, the Lord got after him and he went to the top of High Germany Knob and he went up there and slept on that platform all night, keep low and get him.
Is this in Randolph County?
Mm-hmm.
Randolph County?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we live in Randolph. We just lived about 200 yards from the Upshur County line, between Randolph and Upshur.
Was anyone in your family handy making things or doing any kind of artistic work?
Well, my father was. He made hoes, shovel plows, and rakes, you know, old-fashioned rakes, of course you never see them anymore. Take a piece of wood, you know, hardwood. And then there were rake tables, you know, we never had no rakes, you know, or anything to get our hay together with. And he'd make them wooden rakes, put a handle in them, you know, about 8 feet long. And they'd have about 12 teeth in them. He'd whittle the teeth out, you know, and take an old bracing bit or take one of them old handles over and bore the holes in the wood, you know. And he'd whittle the teeth out and put them in that rake. And make the teeth about that long. And we had started in that High Germany Knob there, you know, and mold the side. And then take them old wooden tooth brakes and we started, all of us start on the hill on the hay, you know. We'd roll till it got so high we couldn't roll any farther. Then we'd roll those on a brush or a sled and move it to where we hauled to where we had to go to stack.
What did you pull it with?
Horse, mm-hmm. Sometimes a mule.
And what did your people live in the same area, all around there in the same house, or
yeah.
Did they move around a lot? Mm-hmm. How far back did they go? That you know?
Not too far. Mm-hmm. That was just a little neighborhood there in what they call the High German Schoolhouse. See, there's a one-room schoolhouse there in High Germany. And they called it the High Germany Schoolhouse.
What's your favorite wood to carve?
How?
What is your favorite kind of wood to carve? Do you have a favorite?
Well, I don't know. If you get just exactly the right kind of white poplar, mm-hmm. It's my favorite kind. White poplar and basswood, of course, there's a difference in both of them. You see, now, a lot of you wouldn't think of any different than the basswood. Basswood, you know, the way a lot of people look at it, but they're wrong there. And poplar is a poplar, in most people's mind, you know, but there's a big difference there.
Can you tell before you start if it's going to be a good piece or a bad piece?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah, I can tell. I can tell by the color and the grain of the wood.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a little bit more about the basswood? How you can tell if it's a good piece or a bad?
What's that now?
How can you tell if a piece of basswood is a good piece or a bad piece?
By the color.
Mm-hmm.
They have to go all together by the color.
Mm-hmm. What color should it be?
It should be a kind of a tan color, uh-huh. Just slightly tan, not white, not real tan, but just in between. Of course, the white basswood, you know, it makes a pretty, you know, pretty carving, but it's not a very durable wood, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you can work out fine detail, and that's about the best kind of wood you can get a hold of if you climb around this country. But I'd rather work with the poplar.
Push it down here.
Mm-hmm.
See if I have the right time.
Well, we've got a bunch of it at the log construction class.
Some big pieces.
Is there any kind of wood that used to be around when you were a boy that no longer, that all the trees died out and there isn't any more?
Well, the only one that I can remember, of course, it's not entirely gone, you know, but that's our native West Virginia chestnut.
The chestnut?
Mm-hmm.
What killed them all off?
Pardon me?
What killed all the chestnut trees off?
Well, that blight, they took a blight. I can remember when there wasn't no dead chestnut trees, they were just the green damn trees out there. And they took that blight, and you'd see a dead branch up on top of the tree, you know. And they'd just, and then the next year, it'd just keep getting worse, you know, and coming down the tree. And then the bark, you know, would go loosened up on the bole of the tree, you know, as that blight came down. And without anywhere from 3 to 4 years, that tree had been entirely dead. It just died right out of us.
They were fighting any hogs on horse chestnut?
Lots of them. My daddy did, I didn't. He had hogs. Of course, all the people are where we live. We'd bring them right out of the woods and butcher them. No, they'd out and they'd find pork when they sat on them chestnuts. Neat and nice and sweet and real greedy, you know.
Get down easy. Go down real easy.
Oh, yeah, get down real
When you were growing up in High Germany, Knob, how many people were in your family? Do you have a big family? And where, around where you were living, were there other families living close by? Was there a little community?
Yeah, see, there at one time, when that neighborhood there was right at the peak, it was about, as well as I remember, there was anywhere from 24 to 26 families in there. And her brothers there, they owned a good farm piece, you know, just over on Upshur County side.
Mm-hmm.
Dudley and Jacob Kearns, that's Jim and Lodi's daddy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
and they had a good farm. They almost made their living on the farm.
Almost.
It's all their sugar, you know, and flour, some salt. That's about all they had to buy. They raised all their meats, you know, and their potatoes and vegetables, canned. They had a big cellar and they canned all the garden stuff, you know. And they lived good.
Raised
buckwheat. Made buckwheat cakes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Made cane sorghum. Raised cane, you know, cane sorghum.
I didn't know
cane grew here. Did you have a big family? Do you have many brothers and sisters?
Almost everyone had a big family back here.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
See, there's nine of us in the family. Mm-hmm. In my family, you know. Mm-hmm. Nine of us. Well, two boys died. Yeah. One died when he was young, a three-year-old. Mm-hmm. Another one died at birth.
Berta, once you started carving, have you just kept that up, or was there ever a point in your life where you stopped for a while?
This spring.
How did I know?
I just, you know, just fed up on the carving. Get well in words, I just kind of lost interest, you know.
Uh-huh.
I had the arthritis pretty bad in the hand.
Yeah, I saw
so,
that.
You know, that's the hand that had to put all the pressure on, you know, when I carve. And the wheels, so that kind of, you know, discouraged me a little.
Yeah.
But not teetotally.
Yeah.
How many different tools do you use? How many different tools do you use when you carve?
I use a pocket knife and one of those little crap and interchangeable blade knives. Get them up your heads. And sandpaper and rasp.
You don't do any, will you hit the chisel with the mallet?
No, I can't do no good with the chisel.
No?
Never learned to use one of them.
Aren't these unusually large then for things that are just whittled? Don't most people who work this large carve them? Do you know about that? If other people carve when they work large?
Well,
you're going to know do they carve life size?
Well, I just thought, I think it's unusual for somebody to work to whittle pieces this large, isn't it? Do you know of anybody else who whittles this large?
No.
Do you know other people who whittle? Do you get together with other people who whittle?
Just all the people that I met at the Forest Festival, some of the ones. There's a man by the name of Reed. He lives out here. Where was he then? All down, you know, towards Philippi, down that kind of area. He was one of course, he done that, you know, he cut the pictures out, you know, out in wood, you know. He'd take a chessing board, you know, and he had knives, he'd go around that, and he'd cut out the face of Abraham Lincoln or Christ. And then he could carve too. He carved out, you know, three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. He had a man there carved out. He told me he got the old railroad tie out in some of the western states. The man stood about that tall, and he had an old pick in his hand, an old railroad pick, you know. You know, somebody knows what where that tie used to, you know, used to place the ties, you know, on the pole. Mm-hmm. He had one of them railroad picks in his hand, and as well as I remember, he had some kind of a bag across his back. He had his hat on all. I think that was complete. He was really good.
When you carve a bird, do you start with the tail and go to the head, or do you start from the head and go to the tail?
Well, when I carve them out, you see, I draw the picture. and I'll take a little coping saw, you know, and I'll saw into that line, you know, back and forth, you know. And then I'll take my knife and I cut them close together, you know, so I can just take my knife, you know, and whittle them off.
You do the head first?
I work all over the same time. Oh. I whittle up here a while, then over here, then back there, then up here. Just go over. You see, if you don't, you can't keep their body shape. At least I can. So when I start to whittle, I'll just go from one place to the other one.
Do you ever draw or sketch? Have you ever in your life gone through a stage where you've drawn birds or?
Oh yeah, I love to draw. Used to back before I started carving. I love to draw. I used to draw a lot of Indian pictures, you know. I draw war parties. Mm-hmm. I got so I could draw them pretty good. They look pretty good to me, you know.
Did you ever have any painter or artist who was like an inspiration to you, whose work you really liked and maybe tried to copy when you were still learning, just to sort of imitate their style because you really liked them?